Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Eric, a teacher and tutor with LSAT Demon. And joining this week is LSAT Demon student Ashwin, who is also a longtime podcast listener. And very excited to have you today, Ashwin, to share your success story because you just crushed the LSAT. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So eventually we're going to talk about your 177. Big round of applause. Well done. But before we get there, let's take a step back, maybe go to the beginning of your LSAT journey and give me a brief history on where you started.
Sure. So I would say I started this journey back in the spring of 2022, last year. That's when I took my diagnostic, took it manually, if that makes sense, just wrote down the answers and graded myself. And was that about a 153? At that time, and I didn't take prep too seriously until much later in the year. So about for 6 months I was on and off, and then I actually started, you know, with proper practice, and thankfully found the demon closer to November of 2022.
So studying in earnest since November 22, and you took the test a few times, right?
That's right. I took it 3 times, with the latest test being in this November of 2023.
Nice. And gradual score increases over those official attempts?
Yeah. So my first official test was in June of 2023. So I've been studying for about 7 months at that point. I was comfortable, confident with my practice test scores. I was averaging in the low 170s, and I was going in the week before that test was my last practice test, and I got a 178 actually on that practice test. So I was, you know, pumped up, felt great, you know, came out of the test feeling good. And that June would have been perfect for my timelines at that point. And I ended up getting 165, and I was, you know, pretty disappointed with that. You know, funny enough, I wrote into this podcast with such a sense of arrogance that I asked, you know, should I even continue to prep during my 2 week, you know, little hiatus while I'm waiting on my score. And Ben and Nathan were pretty straightforward in telling me that, yeah, go ahead and prep and continue this process. If worst comes to worst.
And you did continue to prep, and it turned out that 165 was not a score that you were satisfied with. Did any part of you consider sticking with a 165? That's a score that I know many students would love to achieve. Obviously, it was below your range, but given the pressures of some sort of timeline that you were on, did any part of you think about sticking with that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say personally, no. And the more I asked around, the more people said I should, which was, you know, just some misinformation going around. But it really just comes down to who has an understanding of the law school admissions process and who doesn't. You know, obviously I told my parents, and they were supportive of it. Some, I guess, out of the two, one thought it was good, and one thought, you know, do what you think is best. And same thing with, you know, pre-law advisors or consultants online. But thankfully I had some good mentors that hit close to home with the program I was studying with for a while, and they told me that, you know, you can always push yourself based on your past performances. So I ended up choosing to take it again, and I'm glad I did.
I guess the main thing was being flexible with when you were going to apply, right? If you'd stuck on that June score, you would have been able to apply this past cycle. Now you're looking at applying next cycle instead, but with a 177 instead of a 165. So yeah, good on you for, I know you probably got a lot of well-meaning advice from other people and people who wanted to see you get into law school earlier, but you're doing things the right way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say that, I took it again in October, and I got a 171. So again, with the same decision, and it came down to, you know, what would my mentors, you know, LSAT Demon Gurus, Ben and Nathan, say versus well-meaning people that are more accessible, you know, either through my undergraduate program or family members. I also have friends that have applied and went through this process, and, you know, all of them, not to overgeneralize, but a lot of them, or most of them, thought that was good enough, and I was not myself satisfied. And I was glad to have people like Ben and Nathan on my side. You know, when I first saw that 171, the first thing that went through my head was a little bit of relief, you know, 6 point increase. And then the second thing that went through my head was Nathan's voice, which was like, well, is it within your practice test score range or not? Because if it's not, take it again. And that kind of was what motivated me to sit again for the November LSAT. At that point, I was already registered for it anyway. So there was no risk in taking it again financially, so to speak. So I was like, why not? Let me just go ahead and take it again.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned that you felt confident coming out of your test where you scored 165. You had been scoring in the high 170s on your practice test scores. You thought you did well on official test day. Turns out that you were scoring maybe a little bit below what you would have expected for your range. Do you remember anything about the day in retrospect that lets you know, oh, that's probably where I went wrong? Or on either of your test attempts where you scored below your range, because that's common for a lot of people, can you think of anything that you did differently now that you have scored a 177 on an official test? Can you compare those experiences and think, oh, this is what I did that set me up for success?
Yeah, so yes and no to different parts of that question. So for the first part, can I pinpoint what was the impetus for my 165? I came out thinking, you know, everything was perfect. I was a little iffy on the last game. It took me a long time to set that game up, and I rushed through it. I got everything, all the answers on paper, but in my head, I was like, if I don't do as good as I thought I would, it's probably going to come down to this. Probably somewhere along, I messed up really bad in passage two or something, but I think it was that game. And the same thing with October. I had a surprisingly difficult time with the games, and that's been my backbone of my prep and my scores. So it was kind of frustrating to see that, and it was all about being able to be pliable to the test. And, you know, if worlds weren't working out, I was taking too long, learning when to move on, and deciding that yourself, right? And to the second part of that, which is, you know, did you do anything different? Did you feel differently? To be completely frank, I just learned to lower my expectations coming out of November. I felt the same way, still like maybe a little bit more confident, but again, I learned to tone that down as I came out, because you never really know. And I think it's true when especially Nathan says that, you know, students have a really hard time understanding how they did on the test, which is so counterintuitive, because you've been prepping for so long and you should be at the point where you're predicting your own answers, you know what you're looking for, and then you still come out and you don't even know if you did well or not.
It's difficult to know how you did coming out of an official test day, for sure. One thing that you said which interested me was that was in the November test when you scored officially your 177, you said you went in with what you said were lower expectations. So do you think that means you just weren't as wrapped up in your score while you were taking the test? You weren't really thinking about trying to achieve some sort of score while you were taking the test?
Yeah, that's part of it. Going into the November test, I had, well, these were put together sections. These weren't, you know, full length practice tests. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt, but I had 3 180s, 1 179 and 1 171. Right. So I was going in, you know, amped up, you know, I was just ready to take this. And then the week before, I was taking a logic game section, and it was the game with the the subway stations and the railways, and that game comes down to how you interpret lines, as in like subway lines or connecting railroad lines. And I interpreted it the wrong way, and I got like -5 on that one game, and that session was like 18 out of 23. And you know, I haven't scored that bad in like 6 7 months with LSAT preparation, and this was a week before my test. You know, I'm sitting, felt really good before that, and you know, I was at the point where I hit that, and I'm like, okay, now it's comes down to how you handle this, what mental toughness you can bring to the test, and then also how best you can take pressure off yourself, because you already put so much pressure on yourself for absolutely no reason. You know, maybe some close people about you care about your score. You know, you don't mean anything to the people that are looking at your applications, quite frankly. So no one really cares about your score until you get the score that matters. So I made sure that I had that internal dialogue of making sure what is important to me and what I'm expecting out of this test. And you know, I'm not gonna sit here and water it down. But you know, I was like, you know, if I'm ever gonna score a 180, it's gonna be now. And I've been here for a year and a half. At this point, I'm just getting sick of listening to Ben and Nathan explain the same shit over and over again. You know, I've done all the questions. I'm running out of practice tests and sections to take. It's just getting ugly at this point. And you know, that's when I was like, all right. I didn't go in thinking this was going to be my last test, you know, because I still had that confidence, which was, you know, the LSAT. I can run the LSAT. You know, I've been prepping for this. I can run this. So it wasn't like I'm going to go and this is going to be my last test, but things worked out. School was pretty light in the fall for me. I was graduating this semester, so things weren't a lot going on there. And it was just like, this is a perfect opportunity to take it. And I came out, and yeah, I couldn't tell you how I did, to be honest. You know, there was this one game where it was like a fully determined question or something. I spent like 3 minutes on, and that was the only one that really stuck out to me, and everything else was just kind of a blur. But you know, I'm glad things worked out the way they did.
Absolutely. That confidence on test day, I think, is really key. Really key to go in with a little bit of swagger, as we'll sometimes say, knowing that you're just showing up to do what you do. Was logic games your weakest section when you first started?
Oh yeah, for sure. I was, before I got into this, I was asking around, fortunate enough to meet some lawyers during my internships and such. And I was so surprised to see, you know, how effortlessly, you know, they just dropped. Yeah, I was 175 and yada, yada, yada. But I, at that point, I was, you know, like I said, at around the one mid to low 150s. And I was blown away by Ben and Nathan's approach to the games. Not that I had even an approach before I came across the demon, but it's almost ingenious sometimes, especially the one game that comes to mind is the science, the flasks game. You know, when I first saw Nathan explain that game after trying to attempt it, I was just blown away by how perfect that solution was, how viable and approachable these games are. And that was kind of a catalyst that moved me down to where I am now. But I would say games was my worst section. It's also the most fun section. So I'm sure that those test takers that have taken it and then are going to continue to take the LSAT after August are definitely going to miss out on that. But yeah, I would say games was my worst. LR was probably my best. I started with I think it was like a -4 in the diagnostic, and then I went down, wow, and then I came back up. But yeah, and then RC was in the middle. RC was just learning to like reading, which is something that I don't think I really understood what that means until I started prepping for the LSAT. So that's kind of where I stood before I started this journey.
What helped you learn to like reading?
Learning to like reading is, to me, it's the only reason that I'm able to discern what the main point of all of these passages are. And I think the best way that one of my professors put it to me is it's a quote by a comedian in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and something along the lines of, if you can't dazzle them with brilliance, baffle them with bullshit. And that's, I think personally, that's what the LSAT tends to do, especially on LR, but also to an extent on RC. And if you're not picking up on the bullshit, you're just dazzled by this convoluted, academically high-minded sounding passage that at the end of the day is very easy to understand and also providing you new information, right? It's always, it's giving you something that is new, that is factual. You can even use to impress some of your friends or go on a date and impress someone. But at the end of the day, it's mostly going to help you get into law school. So if you learn to understand that and like that, then I think the reading section gets extremely easy.
So wait, are you saying that LSAT reading comprehension helped with your dating life?
No, but I'm saying it could have. This is a big difference here.
Show up, you're like, hey, did you know that they can test for earthquakes by looking at the lichen on side of boulders?
You know, if anyone's listening to this and plans on doing this, I would definitely start with the art passages because it'll definitely bore you to sleep. So,
okay, so one of the things that a lot of students struggle with, and you've alluded to the different genres, I guess, or the different types of RC passage that there are there, we have to become equally invested in all of them, whether it or not the topic is something that sounds interesting to us, or if it's something that we might read the first sentence and start to feel drowsy. You have to learn to love reading regardless. How did you get into the passages that weren't naturally interesting to you?
Yeah, that's a good question. To be completely frank with you, it was just doing them over and over and over again. You know, a lot of people say that you should foolproof games, but maybe don't foolproof LR or foolproof reading comp or whatever. But the good thing about the demon is that when you mess up on something, it will make you drill those. I've gotten to the point where I just click the drill button and it's the same damn passage again. And I'm about to throw up and I just, you know what? Okay, this is going to be my prep for today. I'll read it again. So I read it again. And then, you know, somewhere in that reader process, I learned to understand that this passage is about someone that, you know, once lived, someone, you know, a living, breathing human being thought this was interesting enough to sit here and write about this. And the least I can do is read it and answer some questions, right? Because I'm not the one that's tasked with writing about Roy Lichtenstein or whatever, or some French artist that, you know, wasn't really French, but, you know, was French because they moved in 7 years after it became technically French or something like that. But it's just about learning to respect someone else's work, someone else's effort. And the least they're asking you to do is just to sit back and take it in. It's kind of like watching a movie. If I'm, you know, watching a really shitty movie, but the time I'm investing is going to pay off by potentially going to law school, then I'm going to sit there and watch the movie and, you know, leave a review on it because it's a productive use of my time. And I really think of reading comp the same way. You got to learn to like reading, you know, maybe start with something you like, but at the end of the day, you got to start learning to digest the esoteric, hard, dry stuff as well.
The LR seems to have come naturally to you. Did you still drill LR a lot or did you not do that as much? Like, what was the kind of balance of how you approach the different sections? Maybe balance of the different sections in your study and then how you balanced timed versus untimed?
Yeah. That's a good question. So I would say, yes, I started out good with LR. I think that was just dumb luck because as I prepped more, it got worse before it got better. So I split it up pretty evenly. I would say that I tried to just do one type of section a day. That's not to say one section, but one type of section. So my weekly schedule would some days look like games on Monday, reading comp on Tuesday, LR on Thursday or what have you. But as I got closer and closer to proficiency, you're able to make time for, 2 to 3 sections of different types of sections, just because you understand how to walk through this. And then you realize on the real test day, I'm going to have to walk through all the sections at the same time, back to back. So it worked. I worked up to being able to include sections, different sections every day. But I started out with breaking it out, section by section. I would say, when it came to, sections versus drilling or untimed, most of my prep was either drilling, or PTs early on. I shunned away from sections. I don't know why. It was just how I decided to do it, I guess. And then as I got into May or April to May, I started doing sections as well as PTs. And I always adhere to the guidance where it's like a practice test. It's just a litmus test to see how your drilling is going, right? So I admit I probably took too many practice tests, especially early on in my prep. And that's like valuable resources that you don't want to waste, because even if you forget about all the questions and you do it again 7 months later and you do well, there's that subconscious thought in your head that maybe I only did so well because I've seen these questions before. So I would suggest not to take PTs, at least until you're, proficient with your sections, after your diagnostic.
Is there any other advice that you have for students currently on the grind? Maybe your elevator pitch for what it is that LSAT success really comes down to?
Yeah, so I think the end of the day, what really helped me stick with this journey, this process, boils down to a few different things. The first one is learning to prioritize what's important in life and what's not. And it doesn't mean that you have to cut off all your friends or, not go out or not go to events, but for some people, that does what it means. That is what it means. And it comes down to how much you value your forward progress and your current and balancing your current life. And for me, it was a big step, especially as a college student. You do have that fear of missing out on different events that's going on, or learning to balance your time with classes and how it is already. But it was learning to prioritize LSAT prep is going to be on my to-do list from here on until I figure it out. It's never going to come off until I figure it out. No matter how long it takes, it's going to be there. That was the first thing. The second thing was learning to romanticize the process. Whatever metaphor works for you, pick and stick to it. I really like college football, so for me, it was comparing this preparation process to college football. And that means like romanticizing your prep. Your drilling is like walking through plays, and then your sections, your PTs are like scrimmages you'll have in the spring, and then your official tests are like big bowl games or big games everyone's coming at to watch. The pressure's on, but what did they do in college football? They performed. The good ones performed. So that's how I thought of it. I really like, there's this, Nick Saban has this really good metaphor for mental toughness, which is, he was saying the story about he was down at one of his beach houses in Florida or something, and trying to buy storm windows of for his new house. And he was saying, asking the salesman, how do you decide, what windows are the strongest? And the salesman could have gone into, these chemicals, how they're built, all of that. But he just said, we just measure and see what it takes to break them, because that's what mental toughness is all about. And to be quite frank, some people may think Ben and Nathan come off a little too harsh, but I needed a program and a mentor like Ben and Nathan, I needed someone to really make me bust my ass, not be complacent with the 165 or a 171 or anything short of perfection, to be honest. And it's not that, you know, they're coming out here and saying that, you know, you suck, you're never going to make it out or whatever, but you need someone in your life that really pushes you. That's not going to be a family member who thinks this is okay, this is not okay, or not going to be someone that babies you. So that was my second, you know, find a way to romanticize what it is you're doing with your, something you like, something that interests you. And I think the third piece, which it would just be, find a way to balance yourself. I'm glad that Ben and Nathan have included that meditation feature in on the demon. I've personally, you know, I'm into yoga and meditation, so I've been doing that before I even came before across LSAT and LSAT prep, but that's helped me understand, you know, how I react in certain situations and how I can control that. But find a way to keep yourself grounded would be my last advice, and build a schedule around that.
Excellent advice. Thanks, Ashwin. Congratulations again on your 177. Best of luck with your applications coming up. And thanks for coming on. It's been a real treat.
Thanks for having me, Eric.
Email daily at lsatdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.